Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of season 10 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is Joe Amodei, an Emmy Award-winning film director, producer, distributor, and the CEO of Virgil Films. Welcome back for yet another stint on my show, Joe.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. It's always something I look forward to.
Yeah, me too. I always love talking to you because you have so many great stories. You know, you actually do need to document them somewhere else besides on my podcast.
I definitely should. But, you know, your podcast right now is the best, so.
Okay. If you're saying that, that's great. I know that you listened because you even got that backhanded comment I made, during Saving Private Ryan about the dirt, you know, about whether you really gave Steve Rubin real dirt from Harry or not. You know.
Yes. I don't know if I ever told you the story about the dirt. So I'm there and I grabbed the dirt, a big handful of dirt, and in the dirt was like some leaves and stuff. And I rolled it up in a handkerchief because that's all I had, a handkerchief, and put it in my pocket. So I had hired a driver. That sounds very richy, but no, it was the only way to get to the camp at that point. So I had a driver that was driving me. And this was before the EU, so they had borders between Germany and Poland, and the camps in Poland. And it was like, going through a border. So on the way back, it was night. And, you know, we pulled up to the gate, and this Russian or German soldier with, you know, a really scary looking gun and two other guys, you know, they're quizzing my driver, who's Russian. And I could tell they're speaking German, and I could tell that the voices are getting a little bit higher, like they're arguing almost. And I'm in the back seat. And so they say, you know, the driver turns around, he says, they want to search the car. And they're looking under the car with the mirrors and stuff. I'm like, what the hell? What's going on? You know,
they're looking for Steve McQueen.
Yeah. So, so they say to me, where were you? And I say, a camp, concentration camp. It wasn't a concentration camp. It was a POW camp. And they're like, there's no concentration camps around. I said, no, a POW camp. I said, why were you there? And I'm trying, now I get into the, well, you know, the Great Escape, Steve McQueen. They have no idea what I'm talking about. And so then I'm thinking to myself, if they search me, in my pocket is a handkerchief, and it looks like it could be pot. It could be anything. And now I'm starting to, you know, try not to act, you know, like I'm nervous, sweaty, or anything like that. And they're like, well, did you, you know, why were you there? And I explained it all. And they finally like looked at me like, you're just weird, you know? And we got back in the car and we left.
They probably said to you, what's this guy been smoking?
Yeah, exactly. So the following two years later, I went back. This time I was smart. I was able to get a car and drive. And the, you know, everything had changed. There's no more borders anymore, at least not today. And I just, you know, I just drove right to the camp.
Oh, wow. And you took more dirt with you?
I did not take more dirt with me. I actually should have, because then I could have taken jars of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's real Harry. There's two or three people that I know that are fanatics, Steve Rubin being one of them. And I, you know, jarred up a little bit of dirt. And I still have some here in the closet, so. But I'll go back again. I want to go back again.
You haven't cleaned that up yet. You know, when do you get this dirt around here?
When do you have this dirt? Yeah. I do want to go back again. I'm maybe next year. You know, I go to the Berlin Film Festival every year, and it's 90 miles from Berlin. And now if I, you know, I could rent a car, get there in 2 hours, do my thing, go to the museum. There's now a museum. I've made friends with the guy that runs a museum. There's a small little town about 2 miles from the camp that we can have. We had lunch at once. I would like to repeat that and go back. I mean, the camp's getting 25,000-30,000 visitors a year. They were back then. Time I went, it might even be more now.
Well, send me a ticket and I'll join you.
Oh yeah. I mean, in March, on March 29th, which is the anniversary of the escape, the RAF comes from England and they have a big celebration. They reenact the escape. Yeah, it's pretty cool. That I would like to get. Yeah. It's
Yeah.
he's trying to turn it into a tourist attraction.
Yeah, why not?
Why
Well,
not?
what else?
You know?
There's nothing else you can do with it these days, so you might as well.
No. So
Okay.
anyway.
Wow, that is a great story. Thank you.
It was
So
fun.
I'll look for that plane ticket in the mail.
Sure, definitely.
So minute 16 begins with Bud being searched and ends with Mrs. Jenkins getting blamed.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in these 5 minutes
Yeah,
that
there
are
really is. There really is. So we will definitely have a lot to talk about this week, but let's start. What's your history with this movie?
So I it's not, a movie that I've watched a dozen times. It's unlike the other films that I've joined you with. I wouldn't say this is at the top of my list or anywhere near even like the top 500 movies I've ever
Okay,
seen or anything.
that's fine.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie because of Walter Matthau, for me anyway.
Yes, I agree. And also
And
Robert Shaw.
Shaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Shaw. In looking at it now, what's really cool about it is New York City.
Correct.
And what New York City looked like in the 70s. And how rough it looked, and because I used to go to New York City in the 70s. I used to go to New York City my whole life, and I remember those days when it was like that. And it, it really does in the same way the Taxi Driver does. It shows the city for what it was,
Right.
and the people, and the people that work for the transit system that are in this film,
Yes.
the way they're portrayed and their language, every other word is a foul word, and it's just the way people talked back then. They're all tough to a certain extent, or at least think they're tough New Yorkers.
It's true. Do you
So yeah,
remember if you saw this in the theater when it came out in 74?
I definitely saw it in the theater when it came out.
But do
I
you
definitely saw it.
remember do you remember if you liked it at the time or you're like, okay, it's
I
a fun
did.
movie and I was
No,
like,
I did like it. I did like it. I liked it better than any of the other iterations of this film. And I did like it. So I have fond memories of seeing it, but it's not a film that would have made my top 10 list or anything like that.
okay. All right. It isn't my top 10 either, but it was something that I felt that I wanted to be able to talk about because I'm always looking for something a little different. That's what it comes down
You found it.
to. I do. I know.
You found it this time. I was going to ask you why this film.
Why not?
I
That's
mean,
what it comes
is
down
there.
to. It because I've always loved the way that this movie is paced and the music. I mean, the music it helps this story stay so suspenseful. The whole way through. And again, it's very 70s. I mean, I've told the story a few times about the first time I saw this. So obviously, I was born in 74, so I did not see this in the theater when it came out. But in the mid 80s, when I was a teenager, so one of my older brothers, he and a group of friends, one night decided that this happened numerous times, that they, went out and rented a movie and, said, oh, let's watch it. And, me being a movie fan, I was like, okay, I'll watch it. I don't know what it is, but I'll watch it. So, this was one of the movies that they brought, and I was just enthralled by it. I was like, wow. Again, as a teenager watching this movie, and this was in the 80s, so it was even before like all of the crime movies of the 90s, before Tarantino, before all those things. And here this was just a gripping and thrilling action film about something that no one, I mean, who thinks about hijacking a train? It's the premise just sounds so off, but it works so well. And I remember my brother and his friends did this numerous times, and I also saw The Longest Yard that way for the first time. Another another fun movie. That will not be on my
Totally.
list. Don't worry about that. Because
It's a great
I'm not.
movie.
It's a great movie. I'm not a football fan, so I
Yeah,
wouldn't want to
it's
talk about the.
Mean Machine, baby.
That's right. Exactly. It's a great movie. It's a fun movie,
Great movie.
but not the one. So again, like I said, I was just looking for something different to do this season. Because if you look at all the seasons that I've done, everything is completely different. Besides the Die
Clear.
Hard iterations. I mean, come on. It started with The Great Escape, then Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, then Die Hard, then When Harry Met Sally, Die Hard 2, followed by It's a Wonderful Life, followed by Die Hard 3, followed by Saving Private Ryan, and
Jamie.
then I just last season I did that shortened version, getting four and Die Hard 4 and 5 out of the way, and then now I'm doing this. So again, I'm looking for something different each time.
The notes that I took down when I was watching this minute is the tension is just starting.
That's right.
It's just starting the realization. In fact, it isn't even real. You haven't even actually gotten to the realization, real realization of what's happening, but in this minute I started I'm feeling, oh shit, this is serious, very beginning of that.
That's right. And again, it's only 15
But
minutes into the movie that they're starting to do this. So I mean, like nowadays there are movies that in the first minute that something like this will happen.
first minute it has to happen.
But then, but they build up this anticipation for 15 minutes where we don't even know that if you're watching this for the first time, you have no idea what's going on here. And I mean,
You have no
we're
idea what's
even gonna
going
get we're even gonna get a line in this minute that is so funny when you don't know what's gonna happen in this movie. So let's actually go a little bit through the minute and talk
Sure.
about all the things that are happening. So we ended on things on Friday with Green basically co collecting all these different subway keys, in order to be able to do all these things on the subway. We talked a little bit more about that on I think it was Friday, maybe it was Thursday, Friday, about what each of those keys does and things like that. But so we get the very tail end of it where we just see the fear on Bud's face, because Bud, as the conductor, knows. He knows more than everyone else that something really bad is happening here.
Yeah.
Everyone else is completely oblivious.
Yes.
Besides the driver, he's the conductor, the engineer is the only other one who knows what's really going on. But he just the look from Brown to Bud is quite scary, because you don't. No, he doesn't know what's going on here, and as a first-time viewer, we don't know either what's going on.
Right.
So
As you said,
I
it's
like that
15
shot.
minutes into the film.
That's right.
But so they spend the first 15 minutes building the characters,
That's right.
building, even the minor characters,
That's right.
and they're spending the time doing it. They're not rushing into it.
Right. And again, this whole movie
And
is an
that,
hour and 40 minutes. It's not as if it's. They don't need
yeah.
3 hours, and they do a great job of developing all to develop them in ways that we know enough about them. I mean, even last week when we got to see Jerry Stiller, we see that he's just bored out of his mind, and don't bother me, that type of thing. And same thing, actually, the same thing goes with Garber. Walter Matthau, his character, he's got nothing to do. He's given a tour to four Japanese businessmen. That's it. They're basically telling us that working for the Transit Authority, nothing's happening. You don't have to worry about things. Which is a great way to start off a movie like this where something will happen. But we first get to see that everyone is laid back.
And you kind of, I mean, it kind of, the look of the film reminded me a little bit of Death Wish to because of the way it's shot on the streets. There was quite a few, not quite a few, but a couple other films from that era. Prince of the City, Serpico to a certain extent. Taxi Driver, yeah, it's the quintessential New York, but Taxi Driver is more, which is the cinematographer was more You got the shadows, you got the smoke coming out. It's more lyrical almost, and gritty at the same time. But this film, like the other ones I just mentioned, you feel like you're walking the streets of New York in 1973
Well,
or 1970.
the cinematographer here is the same one who did the French Connection. So,
Yeah, there you go.
exactly.
And
Right.
you don't see that anymore
No, not at all.
in films.
So,
Good minute.
yeah.
Good
So
beginning.
then we cut away from Bud, and we're in a command center, which I always love the way that we see all of the microphones these people are using, because they all look like disc jockeys from our
Yeah, it
perspective
does.
today, even though they're
Yeah.
not.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, so
That's what they used.
that's right. And we hear a whole bunch of people just talking, and they're all talking into different microphones, dealing with whatever they need to deal with. And we don't know any of these guys, and most of them we're not going to know later on in the movie either. They're just trying to show us the hustle
No.
and bustle and the, I guess, stress that these guys have. This isn't the same type of stress that people have in a control tower, at an airport. But you see that these guys are all talking to the different trains and dealing with everything that needs to be dealt with. So I
That's all in the
like.
background, and it all, yeah, and it also educate. It's almost educational that this room with these people, you get all these different train lines that they have to be watching 24 hours a day, because anything, if something were to happen, and it also though, and I'm not sure if it's this minute or one of the next minutes. It's almost like they're all complacent that nothing ever really happens
Right.
of any
No,
magnitude.
yeah, we'll get that at the tail end of the
Okay, so
story.
that does. Okay,
Right. And
yeah.
then we get a shot of they basically hone in on one of these dispatchers, and we hear him say, "Control center calling Palom 123. Come in, please." And so are you familiar with the actor Dick O'Neill, who plays
No.
okay, so he plays Coral.
Okay.
He's an actor who was born in 1928 and passed away in 1998. He has 149 IMDb credits.
Wow.
Most of them are TV credits.
Yeah.
And he has the distinction of playing three different characters on the TV show MASH. Once as an admiral, once as a general, and once as a mere colonel.
Working actor.
Yeah, seriously. I've seen him in other things. This isn't the first time I've seen him, but because I'm familiar with him from this movie, so when I've seen him in other movies, I'm like, oh, okay, that's the guy from Taking Power 1-2-3. Yeah, not the other way around. But it's also great looking at the switchboards that they're using, because the technology has changed so much since then, and obviously
Yes.
we'll get a little bit more into that when we move to a different location. But it still amazes me that they had this type of technology 51 years ago, when they were doing this, or 52 years ago when they were making the movie.
It's
And
amazing that this movie's 52 years old, to be
yeah,
honest with you.
seriously.
Yeah.
And then the shot changes, and we see the engineer Denny Doyle reach his hand to go pick up the microphone to respond. And first of all, do you know the actor is who plays the engineer?
I know his face.
It's James Broderick, Matthew
James
Broderick's
Broderick,
father
yes, from a TV show
from
Family,
Family.
and
That's right. This
Jeff
is
Broderick's
before,
husband, and
right? This is
yeah.
before Family came out. Family came out a few years from now,
Oh
but
yeah, but he was very recognizable. More for TV than probably for film, but he had a good career. But he died. Matthew Broderick, is it Matthew Broderick's father? Isn't he?
Yeah, he's Matthew Broderick's father. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
He's a good
then
actor.
Mr. Blue does something really weird. He slaps him. He like slaps his hand away
Yep.
he's trying to do it. He gets very, very forceful and pulls out the gun and points the
Pulls
gun
out the gun.
at his head. And he goes, "Sorry, I couldn't help
Yep.
it. It's automatic," which
Yeah.
is a great response, because it's true. I mean, if this is your job, and when the command center calls, you answer.
You answer.
There's no question here about the whole thing. And so doing it this way is great because it again shows us how about reflexes and things like that about this guy. And
Blue.
I'm actually talking about the engineer, but Blue also.
Yeah. And it also, but it also, is it the first time you see a gun?
This, no, it's not. Because he brandished
Okay.
the gun when he was outside of the train. We know
Okay.
when he got him to stop. And then
Okay.
Mr. Gray pulled the gun on one of the passengers who was trying to get by him. He told him, "I'm shoot your peepee off if you want to keep moving along." And then we hear again the sound from the radio. Palom 123, do you read me? Come in, Palom 123. And then we get a shot once again back in the dispatch. And he like moves the microphone away from his face, and then he says to like everyone around him, he goes, "Palom 123, where the f are you?" Back in the 70s, obviously. At that time, there were FCC regulations and MTA regulations and all this stuff about what you can say, what you can't say. But it also shows us, it goes back to what you were talking about before, that this is a typical New Yorker. This is how, when he's talking on the radio, he's going to use one of his voices, and then when he's when it's turned off, he's got it, letting his frustration out in a natural language. Which
Yes.
I liked. And then the shot changes, and we're in a subway station, and we see a man rushing by, dressed interestingly in a vest. We see that he's at the 70th Street. Oh no, it says 2 Street. Sorry. Right. We don't know which station he's in, and he's walking with a guy carrying a set of tools, and he goes, "Hey, what's the goddamn hurry?" And he goes, "I told you, one of my towel men dropped his wedding ring down to John." And he goes, "Well, what are you running for?" And he goes, "Who's running?" And you see that this guy is just like moving really fast, especially given his girth. He's still able to move quite fast. And then they walk through a gate. And he goes, and he just opens it. He goes, "How come this gate ain't locked?" And he goes, "Who's gonna steal a subway train?" Which again, it's a great line because it's not something that you expect when you're watching this movie. Again, we're 16 minutes into the movie, you don't know specifically what's going on, but for this character to make this comment is great. So the character's name is Kaz Dalowitz. He's played by. Are you familiar with the actor who plays him? Have you seen him before in anything?
Again, I've seen him before, but I don't know his name.
Okay, so this is Tom P Petty, P-E-D-I,
Yeah, I
Petty.
recognize that name.
Right. So he has 49 IMDb credits. He was born in 1913 and passed away in 1996. Also, mostly TV, but he is very well known for something besides this movie. He was in some very famous commercials back in the day. And so in the 1950s, he was a washing machine repairman named Charlie for 4 years on a they had commercials for a company called Dash.
Dash.
Dash, DASH. And then he became the go-to Maytag repairman on TV commercials.
Oh, that's
And
before Jesse, I
Jesse
forget his
White.
last name.
Yes,
Jesse White.
before Jesse White. So those are the things that Tom Petty is known for, besides playing Kaz Dalowitz in this movie.
Right.
But again, it's great how you see, you can tell he's rushing, but this the plumber that's following around is not as happy about that he's moving so fast. And the actor who plays the plumber, his name is Timothy Myers, born in 1945. He passed away in 1989 at the young age of 43. He actually only has 4 IMDb credits, but he was very profound on the stage, and even has a Tony Award nomination from 1972. He was nominated for a supporting actor in a musical for Grease. He played the Kinnicky.
How about that?
That's right. And what I mean, I don't know what it really says about the fact that if this movie came out 2 years after he was Tony nominated for the
Nominated for a
series,
Tony?
yeah,
Yeah.
and now here he's just playing a pl just he's playing the a very small role as a plumber.
Very small role. And he only has so many credits, only 4 IMDb
That's right.
credits, but
4 IMDb credits, and he has, basically his conversation here is why you're moving so fast. That's more or less what he's saying. But yeah, they just walk through this gate, and then he closes the gate, and you see that the gate doesn't even close. It reverberates back to open after he just lets it go. So I liked it also. And then we're in another control station, and then we have a woman that's there. Well, first of all, we get a shot of the board with these flashing lights, which is just great. And the thing that constantly shocks me is apparently this is really accurate, and we're going to see that over the next next few days about how this computer board from 1974, it knows so much about what's going on. I mean, this is a typical LoJack. Before LoJack technology was probably even in, well, actually maybe they used LoJack technology here.
And every city has, I mean,
That's
every
right.
city has these control centers. And
That's right.
you know, I just took a trip to Europe, and I was in London, my wife and I, and we went to, it was fascinating, Churchill's war rooms. So it's where Churchill stayed when London was being bombed, and where they conducted the war, you
Wow.
know, probably 50, 60 rooms, all underground. And you look into the room where, you know, the whole wall is map, and there's pins showing where all the troops are.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there, I'm like, that's how they did it in 1942. You know,
That's right.
if the troops, you know, moved forward, they took the pins and they moved them forward, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy stuff.
Really is.
And you wonder, those boards, when I was watching these minutes, you know, I thought, so what's that room look like today?
Today,
Trains are still
exactly.
running, you know. And it worked, but you know, is it all digital? Is it all, who knows?
I'm
Is it
assuming it's all
all
digital
on
now.
a laptop? On a
Yeah.
laptop, you
Sure.
know?
Yep. So the actress who plays this character, Mrs. Jenkins, her name is Beatrice Windy. She was born in 1924, passed away in 2004. She has 36 IMDb credits, and it's amazing. She also has a Tony nomination.
For Greece?
No, not for Grease. That would be amazing if it was for Grease.
Would
No.
be something, yeah.
No, it's for she was nominated for Best Actress for Melvin Van Peebles play called Ain't Supposed to Die a Natural Death, which was actually a play that itself got 7 nominations. But here within a matter of seconds we get 2 Tony nominated actors, which is just
Well, it's
amazing.
interesting, you know, and the movie's made in New York, so you know, I'm sure casting was done in the city, and all these actors that were both, you know, stage and screen, that you know, worked in on both mediums, or television, all three, were there. That's where they lived. So
But
why
again,
not? I mean,
she's
things
nominated for
happened a
Best
lot.
Actress, and she takes this bit part in this movie. You'd think that she'd
Yeah, I
want something with
mean,
a little more meat.
You would think, but nominated for, but she didn't win.
She did not win.
She didn't win, and I don't want to say the Tonys weren't, the Tonys have always been important, but the Tonys today, compared to 1974, nobody watched the Tonys Awards 1974. It was a small little special that was on TV. Now it's, I don't want to say it rivals the Oscars or the Emmys, but
No, good.
it's a highly, but it's still, it's a highly rated show. Things were a little bit different back then. So, and a gig is a gig, I guess. I wouldn't be surprised if throughout the rest of these minutes, not just mine, but the rest of the film, you find more, maybe not Tony nominated, but more Broadway or more stage, I should say, actors than traditional film actors.
I will keep an eye out for
As
that.
opposed if this movie was made in LA, then it would be the opposite.
And then so we hear her say, Grand Central Tower calling command center. Have you picked up on Palom 123 yet? And then the response that she hears back from Dick O'Neill is, keep your shirt on. He goes, that's what
That
we're
wouldn't
trying to
happen
find
today.
out now. And then one of the other guys in the room, whose character name is Moreno, says, "What'd he say?" And she responds, "They're backed up all along the line." He goes, "Jesus Christ!" And Kaz walks into the room and he goes, "Jesus Christ, Kaz, you picked a hell of a day to be late." And he goes, "You wanted a plumber down here, didn't you?" And then he looks around and he goes, "Whose goddamn wedding ring was it?" And then Marina goes, "Who else? Mrs. Jenkins." She's a little embarrassed at this point. So the actor who plays Marino, his name is Robert Weil, born in 1914, passed away in 2002, and he himself has 40 IMDb credits. And with that final line, that's the way this minute ends.
It's a lot.
Yeah, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Nope.
All
I'm
right.
good. I
Excellent.
am
So
good.
great. So every Monday we have a segment called Math Out Monday, where my guests will give their top five Walter Math Out performances, even though you don't get to see them this week.
Top five.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. This guy's made a lot of good movies.
Yes, he has.
A lot of good movies, and coming up with the top five, and you come up with the top 15. I mean, you want them in order of preference, like before?
Of course, start with your number five and work your way up. I
Okay, I
know
got a
that
little.
I know that ranking them means nothing because you can rank them one way today and rank them differently tomorrow. That's fine. I want to know what Joe Amade's ranking is at this very moment. That's what it is. And it can change. It's fine.
Okay, number five is a movie called The Kentuckian. And Walter Matthau, it's a Burt Lancaster film, one of the first films that Lancaster produced. And it's about a trapper and his son who wander into this town, and he falls in love with a woman, and Walter Matthau plays the town bad guy, and he personifies evil. And there's a very famous fight scene in this film where Walter Matthau takes a bullwhip to Burt Lancaster and whips the hell out of him. And it's just a really scary performance. It's supposed to be Burt Lancaster's movie, and Matthau steals the show as the bad guy. It's called The Kentuckian. Great
Right, from
film.
1955. I actually that's on my list of movies that I have yet to see, and you've now pushed it up a little bit more.
Probably number four would be Failsafe. What can I say? Failsafe is such a tense, crazy, finely crafted second by second, minute by minute film, and Matthau is the antagonist, and it's just really good. It's a good film.
I actually just rewatched it. I watched it and the remake, the live, TV remake that George Clooney did in 2000. I just rewatched both of those just a few
I
weeks ago.
like the Clooney version, obviously, not as much as the film, but I do want to watch the film that I have on my list to revisit,
My
because it's just
problem
so.
with with the Clooney version, which it, again, it's a great story, but it's too distracting because every one of the actors in there is someone you know.
Yes.
And there are pluses to that and minuses to it, but it's slightly
Yeah.
distracting. You know, even with
And nobody
Harvey
knew, I
Keitel.
don't think anybody knew Larry Hagman when that movie came out.
Okay, no, here you're talking about the original. I'm talking about the
The
remake.
original, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. God, there's just so many. Number three would be a film called Casey's Shadow. Heartwarming film about a boy and a horse. And the old man that comes into his life or is part of his life. It's a 70s film from what I remember. Saw it in theaters. And it's just very, it's just a wonderful film, and it's Mathau being grandfatherly Mathau kind of role. You know, I wouldn't say there's a whole lot of meat into it, but it's just a wonderful family film that kind of went nowhere.
Right,
Casey's Shadow.
it's from 1978.
There you go.
That's also another one that I'm interested in seeing.
Number two for me is the Bad News Bears. He's perfect in
Yes.
the role. I mean, he's quintessential Mathau. He's at a good age. He's drinking. He's cursing. But you know, he's got a heart of gold, and you know those kids are gonna they're gonna get into that heart by the end of that movie, and sure enough, he pulls it off. Wonderful film.
And he made the right choice not coming back
Oh, he
for
definitely
the
made the right
sequels.
choice. Yeah. So, and my number one, I mean, it's really a hard toss between the role that he plays in Earthquake. I'm only kidding. Because he's uncredited, or he goes by a different name, some weird name. But his most, for me, his greatest performance is the one he won the Oscar for, The Fortune Cookie.
Okay.
He's so good. He's so funny, but he's also so treacherous and
Yes.
backstabbing, and he works so well with Lemon. I mean, you know, Wilder just pulled it off, and they're both so good, and they're both so good together. I mean, they're good together in everything they did, and I could have said Odd Couple, could have said Grumpy Old Man, but nothing's like The Cookie for me. So that would be number one for me.
Okay, my favorite line of his in any movie is when he goes, F you, F you. He says, it took me an hour to figure out that F you meant Felix Unger.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. The Odd Couple might be my least favorite Lemon Mathau movie. I don't know why. I just never. Odd Couple's good, but it never caught on to me in the same way to Fortune Cookie or even Grumpy Old
Okay.
Men.
No, I understand. That's fine. I like you see the thing is that the story of the Odd Couple you know gets distorted because they actually had a TV show afterwards about it. You know, it's like so it's you know obviously you know Lemon and Mathau are much better than their TV counterparts, but it's very different. It's a different tone and stuff like that, and it sort of takes away from you know trying to hone in on the idea of the Odd Couple.
Yes.
Exactly. All right, and now we will play the daily game of Name That Remake, where what I will do is I'm going to randomly give you a synopsis of a movie that was made and remade, and I will give you the year that it was made and the year that it was remade, and you have to try and guess what movie we're talking about. Okay, so
Yes, or in other words, this is the embarrassed Joe Amodei segment of the
maybe
podcast.
you
The only
never
thing
know.
that's
You
left.
never know. It could be something that we've talked about earlier today. You never know. I'm now
Okay.
going to spin the wheel, and we will randomly get a name of a movie that we will say. Let's see. Okay, this is something that you definitely know about. Okay. So this movie originally came out in 1950, and the remake was in 1964. Okay, and it basically tells the tale of a journey of certain people in a forest, and it is told from different perspectives.
So it's the original's 1950, remake's 1964,
Yes.
and it's about a bunch of people in a forest told from different perspectives of each character.
Yes.
And that's all you're going to give me?
I can give you more if you want.
Yeah, you got to give me more.
Okay. A woman is raped and her husband is murdered, and then we get the different perspectives of all
Is
the people
the
involved.
50s film a foreign
Yes.
film? Oh, yeah, then it's Paul Newman in the remake.
Yes, he is.
Is it Outrage?
Yes. So, and the original one is Rashomon.
Is it
That's right,
Rashomon?
Rashomon and The Outrage.
Yeah.
So, I again,
There you go.
The Outrage is an okay movie. It's nowhere near as good as Rashomon. I mean, I don't think there's any movie that does what Rashomon does that comes close.
Outrage is totally forgettable.
Exactly.
I hate to, for me anyway. I would
Well,
never.
you still knew the answer,
I didn't know the answer.
so. So that means something, the fact that you knew the answer to
Yeah,
that.
yeah, yeah.
So like
Cool. I got one for
if I
one.
was given that, I would not have I might have been able to remember that it was Rashomon. I would not have guessed The Outrage. I wouldn't have that like I said,
Well,
for me I wouldn't have thought of it.
I was thinking as soon as you said from different perspectives, I immediately thought of Rashomon. But what threw me was I didn't think you were talking about a
Right.
foreign
Okay.
film.
Understandable.
So I'm trying to think of American films at that
Right.
time. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but once you gave me a little bit more, then
Exactly.
it had to be out.
Okay. All right. So, Joe, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
You can find me at. My email is joe@virgilfilmsent.com. You can go to my website, virgilfilms.com. Yeah, see or find me on this podcast for the next 4 days. I'm living here.
And you were being treated well.
Being treated well. Yeah,
I'm not
always.
making you stay in gritty New York in 1974. But right now indoors.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You're not. I mean, we're. It's funny. As I'm talking to you, I got my phone here, and an emergency alert came on my phone that there's a massive storm coming, and I'm looking out my window. That's raining.
All
So,
right.
we're good.
right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, chew.
Gesundheit.